Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Greg Pletz was a University of Texas football player many, many years ago. And I'll let my next guest lay out exactly who Greg Pletz was and what the issues were. But Greg Pletz is a former Texas football player, passed away. His widow, Deb, sued the NCAA recently. In fact, earlier this week, the case went to trial in the NCAA. And the wife, the widow of Greg Pletz, settled after just a handful of witnesses. The NCAA issued a statement afterwards that I think leaves things just as murky going forward as they were going into that trial. And joining me right now is one of the lawyers who handled that trial on behalf of Deb Pletz, the widow of Greg Pletz. Gene Eggdorf, who is an attorney with Schrader & Associates in Houston, Texas, is joining me on the show right now. Gene, great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm great, Sean. Great to be with you as always.
Yeah, did I lay that out okay, Gene? I'd like for you to lay out the details and explain to the audience just exactly who Greg Pletz was in the genesis of this lawsuit.
Yeah, so Greg played under Daryl Royal in the late 60s and early 70s. He was on the national championship team. Greg was an undersized defensive tackle. It's hard to think about it back then, but Greg was 5'10", 205 pounds playing defensive tackle, and he was an All-American. So that ought to tell you something. After Greg didn't play pro football, he had no dreams of that. He wanted to be an art teacher and an artist, and that's what he did. And then in the early 2000s, he started having dementia symptoms, and he was about 80 pounds when he passed away in 2015. His brain went to the experts at Boston University, and Greg was diagnosed with stage 4 CTE. It was one of the handful of the worst CTEs they've ever seen. And the college epidemic of CTE is really just starting. There's an actuarial report estimating 300 to 400 cases are going to be diagnosed each year going forward. So this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I want to ask you certainly about what this is going to mean going forward. But Gene, I was completely taken aback by the response by the NCAA in this. Now, just I guess before we get into the NCAA's response, the end result of this very brief trial that took place in the last several days, can you share that with us? It sounds like there were only a few witnesses that took the stand, which would seem to me that the NCAA felt like they were maybe backed up against a corner in this. Can you take us inside the courtroom on that?
Well, certainly I feel very strong about how the case was going. We had put on three expert witnesses, two of whom discussed the history of the NCAA and the NCAA's conduct. And I think what folks don't understand is compared to something like the NFL or the NBA, which were clearly always money-making enterprises, the NCAA was founded solely to protect the health and safety of players. That was its original purpose, not to punish for getting free T-shirts and things like that. And so we had a couple experts talk about that. We had a witness who was the medical director of the NCAA who agreed that there was a link between CTE and repetitive head trauma. And then we put on a medical expert from Boston University, and he was on last Friday in the morning, and before he was cross-examined, we announced that the case had been resolved.
And the statement from the NCAA that I'm referring to, I'm talking to Gene Eggdorf right now, Schrader & Associates, an attorney in Houston, and there are a few little phrases in here, Gene, that kind of, if you're somebody who believes that the NCAA should be protecting student-athletes, it should make your blood boil a little bit. The NCAA, and I'm reading this directly from the statement from Donald Remy, their chief legal officer, the NCAA does not admit liability as part of the settlement. Will continue to defend the association vigorously in all jurisdictions where similar unwarranted individual cases are pursued. It is our hope that other plaintiffs' lawyers recognize this is one settlement in one case. So they're basically saying that the lawsuit, hey, we're not really responsible for this. It was an unwarranted lawsuit. This is a one-off. Your reaction?
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, there's no acceptance of the facts medically and scientifically what we're dealing with out there. And, you know, I've seen things where people say you're trying to kill football and all that. And, Sean, you and I have been friends for a long time. You know I'm not trying to kill football. Mm-hmm. What I want is for people to know the facts and the players to be able to make their best educated decision as to what risks they're willing to take. And Greg Pletz didn't get that chance. What the NCAA knew about this stuff 50 years ago. I mean, that's what's incredible. And if you go to the NCAA website today, it tells you if you're an athlete and you're concerned about CTE, you might have a mental health condition and need to see a shrink. So there is still a not get it, and there's plenty of warranted claims out there. I have more of those claims, and I look for, you know, they think they're going to defend them vigorously. Wait till they see how we prosecute them, because we're just starting.
Gene Agdorf joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Gene, you mentioned it, the NFL, and I think you guys even mentioned it in your response to the NCAA statement. The NFL, and certainly they've hid their fair share of information from players, but I think, you know, they're obviously admit now that, you know, CTE is a thing. It's caused by football. Like, they're, you can say what you will about the settlement with the NFL and whatnot, but the NFL clearly acknowledges the link between football and CTE. Why is it that you think the NCAA is so reluctant to admit the same?
Well, you know, I think it all comes back down to you know, what always comes first with folks like this, and it's money. You know, the NFL got their settlement done, and not to get into all the details of the pros and cons of that, but basically they agreed to settle for what's not going to even be 10% of what they bring in 1 year.
Right.
If you start thinking about 300-400 CTE cases a year. I've got a trial coming up with a man who's got ALS, and we know ALS is related to this as well. You're talking hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of claims. You start thinking about what it costs to defend these cases, jury verdicts, and so forth. I mean, we're talking about the sort of thing that could ultimately put the NCAA out of business if this goes the direction it may well go.
Yeah, well, that's where I want to talk about now. I mean, you quantified it a little bit there, 300 to 400 cases. But, yeah, I mean, exactly what is the exposure, not just for the NCAA, but for college football in general?
Well, you're talking that there's a class action going on in Illinois right now for everybody that played over a period of 50 years to be medical monitored, to check them out for CT, to pay for any of the damages from CTE or ALS or Alzheimer's. So those numbers are just, you know, mind-boggling when you think about it. I've got, you know, dozens and hundreds of clients who are all ready to prosecute cases and go forward. So, you know, these are big-dollar cases. Would you think, for example, Steve Gleason, the Saints player, ALS, under the NFL settlement, he qualified for $5 million.
Yeah.
You know, start doing the math for thousands of, potentially thousands of college football players, and the numbers eventually become big, even for the NCAA.
Yeah, and not to give away too much strategy wise, but how much does the NFL and the settlement with all those players in the NFL, how much does it affect, as an attorney, you know, what you can go after with the NCAA affecting, you know, how you go about things? Does the NFL, does that bleed into the courtroom at all with respect to the NCAA?
Well, we certainly, you know, pointed out during the trial that the NFL, you know, has come forward and, you know, stepped forward and admitted the cause and effect situation here. So that was certainly a bullet we have, if you will.
Yeah.
Really, it just becomes down to what cases we will do because, you know, so this really comes down to where your primary exposures were. And so we really are looking at cases for guys who didn't play in the NFL. The data seems to show the more you play, the more at risk you are. And so and the data also seems to show to get the severe forms of CT like Greg Pletz played, you got to play at least college football. So it becomes kind of the strategy more of what clients and cases you're willing to try than it does does anything else. I certainly am not looking at the NFL settlement as something that limits us in some way in terms of the responsibility of the NCAA.
Gene Eggdorf, attorney, Schrader & Associates. He was part of the team that just reached a settlement for Deb Pletz, the widow of Greg Pletz, a former football player in a case involving concussions in college football against the NCAA, joining me here on CBS Sports Radio. Gene, I guess before I let you go, just sort of the end game in terms, maybe not end game, I don't think there will ever be an end game with this, but in terms of improvements that the NCAA can make, I know we see the NFL at least attempting to do things that make the game safe, and we can argue whether they're PR moves or whether they're actually making the game safer. Just as someone who's been through a trial like this, what are some things that you think the NCAA should be doing so that we can reduce the number of Greg Pletzes that are out there?
Well, again, you know, what this case is more about is you know, we call it informed choice, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, boxers go into the ring and they know the risks they have, MMA fighters and things like this. And football players, I would argue, are being misled by folks like the NCAA as to what the risks they have. So number one really has to be full disclosure of all the facts so folks can make informed decisions. And that's tough when you're 18 years old to make an informed decision. In terms of safety in the game, it's clear that concussions – are a bit of a misnomer. The concern is the repetitive hits to the head. And so I do think some of these rules about trying to limit contact we have in kickoffs, you know, the NFL has passed a rule for this next season. I don't know how enforceable it's going to be, but, you know, running backs, don't put your heads down and things like that. The NCAA hasn't even adopted those rules yet. They're not even following the lead of the NFL. And so, are we going to be able to take all these things out of the game? I don't think so. I do think ultimately what we're looking at, because this is what we call a dose response issue, is I think we're going to be looking at no contact, you know, before you're 12, 14 years old. The data seems to show, you know, if you just play high school football, if maybe you play college but you don't play peewee, your risk is pretty low on CTE. So, you know, The less contact, the better. I think the practice rules are going to be key. Folks don't understand that, you know, the blow-up hits you see on SportsCenter, these guys are getting hit in the head all day, every day in practice. And you start looking at what they do at Dartmouth, where they use the robot dummies, yep, and things like that. I think that's the way folks have to go. Anything that limits that contact, you know, more than half the trauma that players have is in practice. So limit that, I think we go a long way towards promoting safety.
It's Gene Eggdorf, Schrader & Associates here in Houston. Gene, we're up against it. Really appreciate that. Great information, and looking forward to catching up with you again soon, my man. Thank you.
Anytime, Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.